Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. So first and foremost, happy Valentine's Day to all. Today, we're celebrating the merger of two organizations that have been long-term partners of our radio stations and for the people. I'm talking about Food Share and Connecticut Food Bank, which just launched a historic union between the state's two largest nonprofit anti-hunger organizations. We're going to hear all about it and let you know how to help or get help if you or someone you love is going hungry in Connecticut. Then, if you're a musician, well, we're going to queue up the chairman of the New England Musicians Relief Fund, which has launched an initiative to raise $500,000 in donations by March 13th. That's the one-year anniversary of when COVID-19 basically shut down the entertainment industry across New England, putting thousands of professional and part-time music makers out of work. And then we'll wrap reminding you to engage yourself on February 25th as Fairfield County's Community Foundation launches Fairfield County's 8th annual Giving Day, the region's biggest philanthropic event uniting thousands of people to make a big impact and strengthen the communities where we live and work. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. The American Red Cross of Connecticut will be hosting a virtual party of the year, Mission Possible 2021, the home edition, on Thursday, March 4th from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Mission Possible 2021 is a fun, interactive, and family-friendly virtual experience that supporters can enjoy from the comfort of their home. Supporters will learn hands-on skills that could save a life, hear life-saving stories from local heroes, and engage with the Red Cross mission in a captivating digital setting. Tickets include a party pack for two people with your choice of food, beverages, and other treats. If you want tickets or more information, you can just go to redcross.org/missionpossible. Well, if you've ever known the feeling of hunger in Connecticut, and man, have more people known that feeling in the past year or so, then you likely have been touched by the goodwill of your neighbors who are likely donating through either the Connecticut Food Bank or Food Share. And we are so thrilled to be welcoming the president and CEO of the newly merged Connecticut Food Bank and Food Share. They announced that the boards of both food banks have agreed to the merger, and they hope to more effectively serve people in Connecticut who struggle with food insecurity. Jason Jakubowski is on the line. Jason, exciting news. And man, just when we thought we were seeing the worst of things, it just kind of keeps getting worse. But I don't think Connecticut's hungry are in better hands than these two organizations, both of which I've gotten to know so well over the past 20 to 30 years. So congratulations to you and the organization, all your staff, and let's dig right into it. Tell me a little bit about why now, when the demand, I guess, has reached unprecedented amount and kind of both engines were firing on all cylinders. Why, I guess, add the administrative and bureaucratic kind of heavy lifting of merging two organizations that are doing such important work?
Well, I appreciate those kind comments, John. And you know, like I say, we're just out there trying to do our job. It's there has never been more of a need here in the state of Connecticut. There's 545,000 people who are food insecure, and we've been out there fighting for them every day and doing what we can to provide food to them. You ask why now? I think the running joke is, you know, as if. Combating a once in a generation pandemic wasn't enough. You know, we decided to go through a merger at the same time. Our board of directors must have been gluttons for punishment. But
was this sort of way off in the distance a year ago when COVID started showing up here in Connecticut and was already becoming widespread around the globe?
Yeah, I think if you had told me on February 1st of last year that by February 1st of 2021 we'd be a merged organization, I probably would not have taken that bet. Connecticut Food Bank and FoodShare have worked very closely for years. We're like sister organizations. We're both members of Feeding America. We have never competed against each other. They're two very different geographic territories. So we've always collaborated on things in the past. And I think that what happened was there was a vacancy in the CEO position at Connecticut Food Bank, and I think our board the Connecticut Food Bank board started talking with the FoodShare board, and I likened it to kind of like a dating process. You go on a first date, you go on a second date, then you start taking things a little more seriously, get engaged, and then you finally get married.
Sure.
Having been on the, I don't know if I would say sidelines, but having had a front row seat for the discussions over the last year between the two boards, what an incredible group of individuals who were just so mission driven. Had nothing to do with egos, had nothing to do with finances, had nothing to do with locations or geography. It was all about, hey, how can we best serve the citizens of Connecticut? And I tell people all the time, the merger didn't happen because of COVID, but it was certainly an interesting time for us to be looking at all of these processes that we've been using for many years.
Yeah, well, certainly a brave and bold move on the part of the boards and leadership, but in terms of the middle and frontline folks, between them and the constituents you're serving, I don't imagine now or at any point in the near future there's going to be a massive amount of difference, except maybe a different branding on the business card or a different way to answer the phone or decals on the trucks.
Absolutely, and I think that was one of the things that our boards set out to do from the beginning, and one of the things that I have said to our staff, to our donors and our volunteers, this is not one of those things where day one everything changes. Our trucks are still out there. Our schedules are still the same. We're speaking with one voice. We have one governance structure right now. So places that were getting served before are continuing to get served. Instead of having two separate networks of local pantries, we now have one statewide network of more than 700 partner programs. So, but the end result or the net effect on the end user, on the client in this case, is very small. I mean, it's
sure.
Continuing to do what we can in these difficult circumstances. The great thing I've already seen, this is my our 10th or 11th day on on the job as a merged organization. It's given me and my team a great opportunity to be able to take the best of both worlds, to see what has worked in the old FoodShare and what has worked at the old Connecticut Food Bank, and kind of use those best practices across the board. And I've really been encouraged by that, and I think that the future is definitely bright ahead.
Well, since this is the opening segment of our Valentine's Day show, and you've already kind of picked up the baton on the merger being like working from dating to a serious relationship, I will go on to ask, as you may have been admiring or at least kind of loosely engaging with or watching Connecticut Food Bank from a distance, what were a few of the things that you were sitting there maybe a year ago or more saying, I see that they're doing something we're not doing? And you did talk about the best of both worlds. And, so once you started getting brought along into this process and it was looking like it was definitely going to happen and then it did, what were a few of the best practices from FoodShare that are beginning to, or you're planning to, a puzzle piece into the best practices at CFB, you know, that neither one may have had or been doing as well?
Well, look, the two organizations complement each other very well, and the old Connecticut Food Bank certainly, the amount, the volume of food that they were able to distribute to so many different corners of the state was incredible, and a lot of those processes are things that we've now adopted for the merged organization. The old Food Share had tremendous programs like SNAP Outreach, Hunger Action Teams, and Institute for Hunger Research and Solutions, which we found ways of integrating into the fold. I've been in the nonprofit sector for a long period of time and on a number of nonprofit boards. Usually in these mergers, there's a winner and a loser. There is one organization that is very strong financially. There's another organization that is floundering financially.
Yeah,
and
right.
One comes to the other one with a lifeboat.
Yep,
that is not the case here. I've never been a part of a merger like this before, where you have two very strong financially organizations.
Sure.
Both with deep roots in the community, very dedicated volunteers, very dedicated employees, and very dedicated donors. This is definitely a very unique nonprofit merger.
Yeah, definitely a Coke and Pepsi kind of thing. Shades of differences,
yeah.
But both still, had the merger not happened, both organizations would have trundled along at top speed doing the great work that they always did. But now this is making
it
better.
Yeah, we have, John. I'll say this. We have, one of the great things we've had, though, is that even in the last couple of weeks, the first couple of weeks of this, we have been able to, our joint expertise has definitely already started to pay dividends in terms of helping folks in the community. Foodshare ran this drive-through distribution at Rentschler Field in East Hartford, going back to the beginning of COVID back in April. One of the things that we did, starting in January, was we expanded that model to other portions of the state. So now, you know, we used to be just in East Hartford. Now we've got a drive-through distribution in Norwalk, in Norwich, and in Bridgeport. So I mean, it's a good way to kind of take that model and expand that as well.
Good. Well, catch your breath for a second. Jason Jakubowski is on the line with us, having a great conversation this Valentine's Day morning about two organizations that have become one. That's right. Connecticut Food Bank and Food Share have merged. Jason Jakubowski is president and CEO of this new organization. A very exciting time, but also a very important time for Connecticut's hungry. Jason, let's switch gears just a little bit to talk from a little higher level here and more generally about what's happening in Connecticut. Probably up until around a year ago, there was a boatload of people that kind of maybe heard the term food insecurity, but it didn't really hit home until they were like the 280th car in line there at Rentschler Field. Up until then, so many of these people were the ones that were putting the cans and the non-perishables into the box.
Yep.
Now they're getting the box. Let's talk about food insecurity in Connecticut.
We've had so many people, you know, drive through those distributions at Rentschler Field and other places, and have actually said that word for word, is that, hey, you know, we were longtime donors, and now, you know, we had to rely on this. Well, we found, we did a survey very early on. Our Institute of Hunger Research and Solutions did a survey early on at Rentschler Field, and one of the things we found is that 74% of the cars had never used our services before. That blew me away, because it told me that there was a huge change in dynamic in terms of the economy here in the state of Connecticut. What was happening, and when you would talk to people, you would hear these anecdotes, is that these were people who were gainfully employed. They had 5-6-figure-a-year jobs. They were able to provide for their family. And then, due to no fault of their own,
right,
and without any warning, the rug was pulled out from under them. It echoes the long-held belief that most people in most families are only about one paycheck away from having to rely on their local food bank. It's a scary reality. It's one that a lot of people don't necessarily think of when they think of Connecticut. We certainly have this, you know, we are the richest state in the union. We also have poverty in all corners of Connecticut. We serve, Connecticut Food Bank and Food Share serves all 169 towns mm-hmm. in Connecticut. There is not one town that does not have somebody that is not food insecure.
Right, but more important than that 169 number is the 700 plus community programs and partners that you guys have. Take two very, very strong independent organizations, put them together and make them stronger together, and that's got to really be the tide that is rising all of these 700 boats. Do you think that this merger and the support you're going to be able to provide to all your community partners is going to, in fact, help a few of these stay in business or greatly improve their ability to serve their own constituency?
Absolutely. I mean, we certainly hope so, but I don't see any way that it doesn't help. It allows us to be able to have any type of savings that there is through a merger like this. I mean, we're not a for-profit company in which, you know, we're handing out dividends to shareholders. Everything is going back into the network, either in the form of food or the form of help to local pantries. One of the things I can give you, I'll give you a little Valentine's Day preview here. One of the things we'll be announcing in the next week or so is that we're going to be investing $500,000 in all of the pantries that have emergency food distribution programs, basically grants to pantries to help them, you know, stay alive through this COVID crisis.
Fantastic.
That's probably not something we would have been able to do as two separate organizations, but coming together, we are going to be able to make that investment in the in this pantry network.
Great. Well, we just got a couple more minutes with you, Jason. Let's quickly hit a couple more points.
Yep.
Now, are we looking at something on the horizon that is going to be a new brand, or do you foresee it continuing to just move along as Connecticut Food Bank and Food Share?
Yeah, I mean, saying Connecticut Food Bank / Food Share or CFB / Food Share is definitely a mouthful.
Yeah.
We are in the middle of a process looking at a new name and some possibilities for a new name, which would come with a new logo, a new website, et cetera. Our plan would be to roll that out sometime within the next few months, but no determination has been made on that yet. We're working with an outside firm that's going to offer some choices to our board of directors, and then ultimately they'll be able to make a choice. But we're just for now we're using CFB / Food Share, but we will have a new name, a new logo, and a new brand within the next several months.
Great. Certainly, the hundreds of thousands of people who donate or in some other way underwrite your work are the backbone of the feeding
Absolutely.
System here. But you've got 8,000 volunteers typically that interact with either or both now the merged organization annually. But I imagine you could use 16. Let people know how they can help.
Yeah, people can go right now. I mean, people can go to foodshare.org or ctfoodbank.org, sign up to volunteer or make a donation. You really hit the nail on the head, though, John. We would not exist as an organization. We literally could not do what we do if it weren't for our volunteers donating their time and if it weren't for donors donating their money. We are only about 1% government funded. We are only able to do what we do because of those donors and those volunteers. And I personally can't thank them enough. We've definitely, they're always needed in all times. This last year, we would not have made it through this without them. It's
right.
That simple.
Well, 2 weeks ago, yesterday, was the official launch of the merger of Connecticut Food Bank and Food Share, and we're really thrilled to be able to get their new president and CEO on the award-winning For the People. Nice and early in the process, the beginning of an upgraded and merged friendship, Jason Jakubowski, and as we have been such loyal supporters members and partners with both of your organizations over the nearly 30 years that I've been doing this program. We hope that this year and the next 30 will be equally fruitful, and we're there to help. Just let us know how we can do that. And in the meantime, congratulations, best of luck, and we'll be talking to you again soon. Well, as you heard from our intro here on Valentine's Day, we want to give some love to the people that make us feel so good. I'm talking about all of the live music performers and support people, spouses, girlfriends, boyfriends, and others who love or are our local musicians. It has been an extremely difficult year for anybody who has been following it. Beginning mid-March of last year, virtually all major performance venues in Boston and around New England began to close, and to this day, they're still shuttered, leaving thousands of musicians with little or no means of making a living in their chosen field. Unfortunately, some have left the industry entirely, while others are hanging on, navigating unemployment, online performances, small gigs. I have to tell you, as a musician myself, they are few and far between, and I'm so pleased to make the acquaintance of the board president of the New England Musicians Relief Fund. I'm on the line right now with Gabe Langfer, who sits in that important seat. We'll be talking to him before the break, and then we'll take a few moments and then check in with Katie Kennedy, a professional musician who has already been the beneficiary of a relief fund that the New England Musicians have put together, and they are continuing to fundraise with $500,000 goal, and we're counting on all of the award-winning For the People listeners to help them make and exceed it. Good morning, Gabe. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. So quickly, a little bit about yourself. Are you a player or just a music lover?
I am a professional bass trombone player. I'm based in Boston. But I travel all over New England playing in orchestras and theaters and various concert venues.
So how did you connect when everything started to go bad and raise to the level of being the leader of the New England Musicians Relief Fund?
Well, I'm a member of the board of the Boston local of the American Federation of Musicians, the Musicians Union. Mm-hmm. And we were having a regularly scheduled board meeting on Friday, March 13th of last year, which is really the date that we, you know, if we can pinpoint one date where basically everything shut down, it was then. And, you know, during that meeting, we were hearing about all the gigs that had been canceled. And, you know, every once in a while, every few minutes, one of us would glance at our phone and see that another email had come in about another gig that was canceled, or, you know, a member, you know, a musician who had heard about a cancellation. So another board member and I stayed after that meeting and started researching what funds were available, you know, what kind of relief was available for artists who were suddenly out of work. And it was hard to find. I mean, there are some, but there weren't any that we could, there weren't many that we could find that were locally based. Mm. So we immediately started thinking, what can we do? You know, a union is, you know, a union is a, I believe in unions. That's why I'm a board member of the, yeah. Of the union.
Sure.
But unions are, you know, there are things that unions can and can't do, you know, legally and logistically. And we realized that, you know, we needed to be able to partner with a nonprofit organization in order to really be able to effectively ask the public for money to help musicians who were suddenly and surprisingly out of work. So we started looking around for a partner, and then, you know, we realized that the best thing we could do was really just start something. So I gathered a committee last spring of other musicians, that board member who stayed with me to look at it. You know, other musicians, some both professional and amateur musicians, you know, amateur musicians who have served on boards and were very passionate about, you know, helping the people who were their teachers and you know, the people who give the concerts that they would love to go to. And then also we brought on a couple of music industry executives, you know, people on the management side who, you know, really cared about what was happening to the freelance musician community. And as we gathered that board and started to discuss what we could do, we realized two things right away. One was that limiting ourselves to just the Boston area was not necessary, you know, and that you know, we could do something to cover the scope of the entire region, you know, all of New England. And then the other thing that we realized right away was that, you know, there are many musicians who make their livings without union contracts. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't just be limited to the union. So we tried to make a pretty broad scope. And our first partner in doing this, you know, as we were figuring out how to raise money and how to do what we needed to do, was a national organization called Sweet Relief that has been in existence for a few decades. Mm-hmm. And we basically went with Sweet Relief's, you know, very model. Basic and simple calculation, sure. Which is if you make at least half of your living from performing or teaching music, then you qualify as a professional musician. So sure. That became our basic benchmark. Mm-hmm. Union affiliation didn't matter. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. It was the time on the job.
And genre doesn't matter.
Sure.
You know, so we've been able to, you know, we've really worked hard to get the word out to people, you know, in the singer-songwriter world, in the folk world, in the jazz world. I mean, this came out, I'm a classical musician primarily,
right.
I love all kinds of music. But you know, we've really tried to get it out to the wider community.
Yeah, and
we've been able to do that.
What I mean, as a musician myself, what was most frustrating, kind of watching from the sidelines as things started happening over the past year, was how much of the targeted governmental assistance and support sort of made a blanket assumption that virtually everyone who's engaged as a musician, you know, has some other fallback job. You know, it's like, it seemed like there was just this general idea that, you know, we'll give them a few $100 and, you know, tide them over, because, you know, who plays music full time and depends on that for their livelihood, for crying out loud? Right.
And speaking of government aid, you know, it's, the fact of the pandemic unemployment assistance that was opened up for people who are self-employed, that's a big step. You know, that's something that's been a long time coming. Mm-hmm. To recognize that not everybody gets W-2s from the people that employ them.
Right.
You know, and that you know, self-employed people need help as well.
Right, right. So I don't want to cut you off, but we've got about 2 minutes left before we got to call Katie. What I really wanted to get out of the way was first, you know, my sincere congratulations to you and your team at the New England Musicians Relief Fund for the $300,000 you've already been able to raise and distribute to help at this kind of grassroots level. But you do have a goal to meet and exceed $500,000. I want to make sure people know where they need to go, how they can possibly help. You know, a dollar is not too small, you know, because every dollar is going to go to make a significant difference in the life of somebody that does not have it.
Yeah, you can go to NEMRF.org. That obviously stands for New England Musicians Relief Fund, NEMRF.org. And from there, You know, right at the top of the page, you can see how to donate and how to apply for aid if you're a musician who needs some help.
Very good. And in the meantime, we're going to find out a little bit more about the challenges as well as the reward for being an affiliate of the New England Musicians Relief Fund as we ring in with Katie Kennedy. She is not only one of these tens of thousands of working musicians here in Connecticut and New England, but also a recipient, and we'll learn a little bit about how she put the money that she was able to get, thanks to the donors of the fund, to good work in her musical world. So in the meantime, Gabe, thank you so much for your input. Gabe Langfer is the president of the board of the New England Musicians Relief Fund, himself a full-time musician. Gabe, great to meet you, and thank you so much for your time this morning.
Do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the event tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this. The Community Foundation for Greater New Haven and its partner in philanthropy, the Valley Community Foundation, have opened up several grant application processes and capacity building workshops for nonprofits throughout their regions in 2021. For eligibility requirements, a grant seeker webinar, application deadlines, online grant applications, and dates for upcoming capacity building workshops, grant seekers providing services in Greater New Haven and the Lower Naugatuck Valley are encouraged to visit the Community Foundation's website at cfgnh.org and the Community Foundation's website in the Valley at valleyfoundation.org. Well, as promised, we are back and so pleased to make the acquaintance of Katie Kennedy. She is a accomplished cellist, an active performer, and has been a dedicated teacher for more than 10 years. She comes from a musical family and began her studies with her dad, who is also a cellist. She is a graduate of the Oberlin Conservatory and has a number of fantastic qualifications that have earned her the privilege of playing many, many locations. But that all came to a screeching halt, as we know in our hearts and heard more evidently from Gabe in the last segment. Katie, great to meet you, and sorry for the troubled times that we are all in as musicians. Tell me a little bit quickly about when things started, when the red lights started going off in your world and gigs started just disappearing.
Mm-hmm. Well, the week of March 13th, I was rehearsing with the Hartford Symphony. We were rehearsing Dvorak Eighth, which has a great cello part. And, you know, that week, you know, things were beginning to get dicey. So we rehearsed Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, and Wednesday evening. I just had this feeling it was the last time we were going to play together for a while. Mm-hmm. And I had started, you know, hearing news about the pandemic. And the month before, I run a chamber music program for high school students in Italy each year. Mm. And we were holding auditions in January and February, making plans. And one of the days that I had a number of auditions scheduled was the day that Italy was at the top headline. The coronavirus in Italy was the top headline on the New York Times. Mm. So it was definitely on my radar. And things really did come to a screeching halt on Thursday, I guess, March 12th, and Friday, March 13th.
Up until that point, did you also do, you know, occasional private work, you know, receptions, small gigs, family gatherings, weddings, things like that?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. So I play, I'm a freelance cellist. I play most frequently with orchestras or for operas, accompanying Broadway shows, in chamber music configurations, accompanying choral gigs, church gigs, and occasional private functions as well.
And so in a given year, I imagine you're absolutely working, you know, probably 50 plus out of 52 weekends and then a bunch of days in between. Over the past year or so, or since last, you know, March 13th, would you say you have lost, you know, 95%, 99%, 80%? Where are you at right now?
In terms of performing work, I've lost it. At least 95%.
Okay.
I've been grateful that I've had a few gigs. I played a couple outdoor memorial services, funerals this summer, yeah, with solo cello. And I've done some live stream church services.
Okay. Well, what can you tell your fellow musicians about the New England Musicians Relief Fund?
It's really, it's, you know, it's founded by musicians to help musicians. And I've been grateful to have been the recipient of a grant. And, you know, every bit counts in terms of financial support when all of this work has fallen away.
What was the process like approaching the fund and going through the, you know, the system to get to the point where you were able to qualify for and receive some sort of a grant?
Mm-hmm. So there is an application that musicians can take a look at on the website, and just to show that you really you have a history of performing, of being an active working musician. And if anyone has questions, they're very friendly people to help answer them. And there's some documentation required for the application as well.
Yeah. As I was talking to Gabe, he was mentioning off air that, you know, a lot of times, you know, musicians who have a combination of jobs, they cobble together, you know, they get, you know, a W-2 for maybe one, some 1099s, as well as keeping their own records for their own personal or private gigs that they do on a one-off basis. Was your situation similar to that?
Yeah, I have a mix of 1099s and W-2s.
I was going to say, did that make it any more challenging if you attempted to approach the conventional system of support offered through the Labor Department, unemployment, federal government? Did you?
Yes, absolutely.
Tell me about that.
No, this is. Well, the system clearly, you know, isn't set up for people with mixed income. So if you have any W-2s, I mean, they have been trying in the first stimulus relief package. There's the pandemic relief. There's a part of it for gig economy workers. I guess it's the pandemic relief fund. Mm. And however, if you have any W-2s, you're not eligible to apply for that, you know, even a single one. And I have, you know, in a typical year, I'll get, you know, a dozen 1099s and 8 or 9 or 10, you know, W-2s, because my income is from a variety of sources. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, if you apply for traditional unemployment, they only look at the W-2 work.
Okay.
In my case, that just represents a portion of the work that I do.
And probably represented the equivalent of a part-time job just to navigate and maintain the system trying to get some meager compensation through a support network that I imagine the frustration of looking across to even other creatives who seem to just fall right into the track and you know, checked all the boxes and were getting some help.
Yeah, it's definitely challenging. And I also have a part-time job teaching at the University of Hartford. Mm. And so, you know, when I did try to apply for unemployment in around May, and you know, I kept bumping up against this. Well, unemployment is not for university faculty and their summer vacation. Mm. So yeah, it's definitely trickier navigating the system, and there's not as much aid available.
Well, I'm glad you were able to come on and talk for a few minutes, Katie, because you really did kind of present the quintessential creative musician type. And I'm sure virtually any of your colleagues who are listening to this, either live or on the podcast, is identifying with one or all of the challenges that you faced. I really appreciate you coming on and talking about it. And I'm so happy to hear that the New England Musicians Relief Fund was able to help. To date, the NEMRF has provided grants of $1,000 to more than 300 performers across every genre and region of New England, especially here in Connecticut. People like Katie, we hope that folks will be able to support this important organization. First and foremost, if you are a musician who is looking for a grant, please go to nemrf.org/apply. And if you can give a dollar or five or 10, the equivalent of the tip that you might give if you were in the room listening to and enjoying one of these musicians here on Valentine's Day or any day, send that tip to nemrf.org/take action and get involved in this fund to help the people who make the beautiful music that help us fall in love on Valentine's Day and all the other days of the year. And we're hoping for clearer skies and smoother sailing for all of my fellow musicians, including you, Katie. Thanks for being on the program today. Well, we hear a lot about community foundation work, and we count probably somewhere in the neighborhood of five or six of them as very good friends and partners on the award-winning For the People, the least of which is the Fairfield County Community Foundation. Juanita James, their president and CEO. Is on the line with us this morning. Third interview of the morning, so a little bit tongue-tied here. But Juanita, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us.
John, thank you so much for having me.
And so, great to hear your voice on our program again. Yeah. First of all, you know, we want to talk about the Fairfield County Virtual Giving Day 2021 in just a couple of minutes. But in the meantime, let us know how things are going in your neck of the woods with the Fairfield County Community Foundation here in this COVID era.
Well, I will tell you, in the COVID area, we are busier than ever. We're very fortunate that we were able to go virtual and work remotely as of March 13th of last year without skipping a beat or dropping anything. And everything has been intensified since then. The requests have been intensified. The giving, thankfully, has also been intensified. Everyone has been on board to streamline our processes as much as possible so that we can get necessary resources into the hands of people who need them most as quickly as possible. I'm really proud of my staff and my team because definitely committed, dedicated, and I feel sometimes working round the clock to try to meet the needs that grow so much faster than the resources we have to meet those needs. But, you know, everyone's stepping up, and everyone is stepping up, and that, and I'm really happy to say that. Unhappy to say how much need there is.
I was going to say, when people say Fairfield County Community Foundation, sometimes eyes roll, you know, richest piece of real estate on the planet right there, smack dab in the middle of your jurisdiction, but also in terms of the state of Connecticut, probably representing the largest population of folks who are challenged or in need across the state of Connecticut. So while perhaps the donor pool is at least on face quite robust, the need is substantially greater. So the proportion of dollars is still spread kind of thin, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, I'm really glad you mentioned that, John, because of the top 100 metropolitan areas in, you know, in the country, Fairfield County ranks number one in terms of income disparity. So we have the wealthiest and we have the poorest, all under one roof. And we feel our role as a community foundation is to make people aware of the needs and where they are, and how they can, if they care about their neighbors, and if they have any sort of charitable mindset, how can they really help and address that? And you're right, it is a surprise for everyone. It's a surprise to know how many tens of thousands of children are hungry in Bridgeport. It's a surprise to know that over 50% of the population now is spending more than 30% of their income for housing, you know, your most basic needs. So the more we can educate people in terms of where the need is and how they can help, the better we can all come together to close that disparity.
Yeah, and certainly straddling the largest population proportionately of haves and the largest proportional population of have-nots has to be a tightrope walk for somebody like you and the leadership of your Fairfield County Community Foundation, because you're sort of in some ways kind of the quarterback of the whole team in terms, or maybe even the owner of the team in terms of helping to deliver to this huge network from very large and well-established global branded nonprofits down to these boutique community deep grassroots organizations. You know, they all really depend on their membership, if you will, with the or at least partnership with the foundation.
That's very true, and I think it's one of the greatest challenges, but it's also one of the greatest rewards. You know, when we realize that we're not the largest community foundation in the state, but we certainly serve the largest population, because Fairfield County is spread geographically, you know, 23 towns and cities. We have rural and we have urban. We have, you know, as you say, rich and poor. So part of that is so many diverse constituents, and yet the needs are there. And particularly during the COVID crisis, we saw a need everywhere. We actually ended up providing some type of resources and support to nonprofits in all 23 towns and cities in Fairfield County, and reaching over 260,000 people. So it is it's quite a conundrum, because people think of Connecticut as being small and manageable and wealthy. And as you say, we have a pretty broad spectrum, and we are fortunate to be in many ways at the hub of that and have our finger on the pulse and commitments to all of our communities. So between staff and board, there's a lot of representation and caring for one's local community and how it all comes together.
Well, we're going to talk about
that. That's why we did Giving Day.
And we're going to be talking about folks getting involved in the 2021 Giving Day coming up soon. But looking back at the 2020 Giving Day, this happened right when we were sort of, you know, kind of standing on the edge of the cliff, worrying about and suspecting that things were going to be really bad, but never really knowing what we were in for. Tell me a little bit about how the 2020 Giving Day really helped get the ball rolling into this kind of COVID-challenged situation.
Well, 2020 Giving Day was really quite remarkable from the standpoint that we had over 12,000 different individuals making donations and contributions to over 400 nonprofits. And we raised like $1.65 million in a 24-hour period. And this was happening as people were both becoming aware of the fact that this COVID virus was going to impact people who are the most needy. But it was also impacting small businesses. It was impacting the middle class. And, you know, people were also concerned if they had some means of what their markets and would look like. And you know how devastating it was for all of the businesses to close that did have to close for the increase in unemployment. So the needs were just broader and widespread, and it touched everyone. It didn't just touch one small segment or one small geographic area. It touched everyone. So we were pleased that we actually raised funds from all 23 towns and cities in Fairfield County. And the generosity, you know, the average gift, I can't remember the exact dollar amount, but it was certainly more generous than it had been, even though people were concerned, frankly, about their own financial stability and circumstances.
Yeah. I guess the people who kind of consider themselves to be in a little bit of trouble really get a lot of gratification and the ability to empathize and sort of share the little wealth they have by giving. It's always so touching.
You hit the nail on the head. One of the things about Giving Day that makes it so powerful is that no gift is too small, right? So a $10 donation, a $25 donation, if that's what you can afford to give, when you put together tens of thousands of those, they add up to a lot.
Sure. Well, I was going to say we want to, you know, here it may be Valentine's Day as we broadcast this program, but we want to ask people to just put a little bit aside to share some love with those in need in Fairfield County. So in the last couple minutes that we have with you, Juanita, let's switch gears and focus on February 25th and just remind people what they need to know and how they can best help.
Well, beginning at 12:01 a.m. on February 25th, all you have to do is log on to fcgives.org, and you have an opportunity to see how many nonprofits have signed up and registered. You have an opportunity to search, whether it's by interest area or geographic area, learn more about what the nonprofits are doing, and with a few clicks of the mouse, make an online contribution. And it really goes a long way because those contributions add up. What makes it exciting is that we have over $100,000 in sponsors that sponsor these special power hours, so you can win prizes. You know, it's something to boost not only the direct contributions, but an extra boost at different times of the day. And that excitement and friendly competition is why I think so many people get involved. So we have a launch party that starts that morning. This time it will be virtual, but it's a way to kind of get the morning going. And we do throughout the day have special promotions for special categories sponsored by very, very generous corporate private businesses to make this truly a community wide effort for all of Fairfield County.
Great. So if you have a favorite nonprofit, large or small, this is a great way to conduit them a little bit of support. FCGives.org is the website. You can go to now here on Valentine's Day and make a plan with the one that you love to pool your money together and pick some charities, maybe not just one that you'd like to, you know, maybe instead of going out and splurging on that huge dinner, you know, make a nice little candlelight dinner at home here on Valentine's Day and take the money you might have dropped, the $50, $100, $150, and decide how you might want to spread that out or make a big hit and devote it all to one of these Giving Day organizations. And also, really quick, we're at our closing mark, Juanita, but you certainly have a worthy mainline marquee sponsor with Bank of America there. We didn't want to say farewell.
Bank of America has been our key lead sponsor from the very beginning, all 8 years. And, you know, collectively we've raised $9.3 million in the previous Giving Days, and we really hope to break all kinds of records this year when we know people need it most.
Great. Well, the need is
Bank
great.
Bank of America has, and it's exciting, and it's a way to feel like you're making a difference.
Right. Well, February 25th is the day for Giving Day, powered by Fairfield County's Community Foundation. Their president and CEO is my guest, Juanita James, again here on the award-winning For the People. Juanita, best of luck to you, and thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program for the people. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.